the hits.
Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners, so we speak a bit slower, and we use words and sentences especially written for people learning English. Here are the stories we have for you on today's program. Gregory Stockel brings us the Education Report. Today's story is about college students acting as substitute teachers. Jonathan Evans brings us a story from Japan. A young person there is helping others deal with emotional troubles with an online counseling service. I will return with this week's words and their stories. Today's expression is once in a blue moon. What does it mean? And what is a blue moon? I will explain both. Finally, we end this broadcast with The Making of a Nation, our ongoing U.S. history program. But first, here is Gregory Stockel with the Education Report.
Samantha Wood is studying to be a teacher at Northern State University in Aberdeen, South Dakota. This year, the third-year student and other teacher candidates learn by working as substitute teachers themselves. "I'm learning by experience, which is really awesome for me," she told the Aberdeen American News. Wood said she was nervous about her first time being placed in the classroom, but she could not wait to see what the teacher had planned for the day. Wood added it was easy for her to keep the class activities moving using her imagination. After 2 weeks in different classrooms, Wood has nearly met her required hours of field experience in teaching. However, she planned to continue working as a substitute teacher. Andrea Moon is a dean at the University School of Education. She said teacher candidates from the university have worked as substitute teachers in the past, yet they did not get credit for field experience in the classrooms. This year, as older substitute teachers do not want to fill in during the COVID-19 health crisis, the university received approval to give teacher candidates credit for field experience. "We're calling it an alternative field experience," Moon said. She added that public schools do so much for the community, and the university is pleased to have a chance to help as partner. More than a third of Northern's teacher candidates have joined the program. Wood said her experience in the classroom got other students interested in the program. "After I shared my experience, they were asking me questions and more willing to try," she said. Becky Guffin, head of the Aberdeen's public schools, agreed the need for substitute teachers is high this year. She said because of COVID-19, teachers could be out of work for more than one day. The South Dakota Department of Health suggests a 2-week quarantine for someone who comes in contact with an infected person. It also takes several days to get results of a COVID-19 test. Guffin said the school system has been able to fill the need for substitute teachers so far, but sometimes it takes more than one substitute. In some cases, one substitute comes in the morning and another works in the afternoon. Sometimes, Guffin said, teachers use their open planning period to cover another classroom. During planning periods, she said, teachers do not usually have students in their classroom because they are planning future classes or finishing other work. Guffin said the Aberdeen public school system is now seeing some COVID-19 cases. Since the high school has the largest group of students, She expected that there will be more cases there. And teachers are ready to meet the needs of students who miss 10 to 14 days of school and have tests and work to make up. Guffin said the goal is to keep the buildings open and filled with students and teachers. We're holding our own, she said. It's a very different year. I'm Gregory Stockel.
Now, Jonathan Evans tells us about a young person in Japan who is trying to help others with their troubles.
Suicides are on the rise among Japanese young people aged 13 to 19. That concerns 21-year-old Koki Ozora, who suffered from depression as a child. Ozora started a non-profit volunteer organization called Anata no Ibasho. In English, that means a place for you. The group offers a 24-hour text messaging service for those seeking a sympathetic listener. Anata no Ibasho promises to answer every request as soon as possible, and sometimes within seconds. The online Japanese language message service has grown to 500 volunteers since March. Many of them live in other countries and different time zones. The volunteers provide assistance during the hours when suicides are most common, from 10 at night to sunrise. Ozora's idea has worked well during the COVID-19 crisis. Every part of the operation is carried out online, including training for volunteers. Anata no Ibasho grew its volunteer numbers quickly. Such online services are rare in Japan. This really gives me hope, Ozora said of the large number of volunteers. They tell me they just had to do something. Anata no Ibasho has received more than 15,000 online messages asking for help, or about 130 a day. Some messages express very deep pain. One texter discusses their fears of killing their own children. Another talks about self-hate after being sexually abused by a parent. 32% of the texts sent to Anata no Ibasho concern suicide. 12% of texts are about the difficulties and worries of parenting. The volunteers' goal is to offer immediate help within 40 minutes. The advice can include that a texter seek help from police or aid from a shelter. Japan has about 50 suicides a day. A woman is killed once every 3 days by her partner or former partner, and 160,000 cases of child abuse get reported each year. That information comes from government and United Nations data. Several suicides among Japanese celebrities this year have brought new attention to mental health issues in Japan. Sumie Uehara is a volunteer at Anata no Ibasho. She says helping someone through online messaging can be difficult because all you have are words. You don't ever negate their feelings or try to solve everything in a hurry. You're just there to listen and understand, she said. Ozora says he thinks Japan still does not recognize the difference between a healthy solitude and an unhealthy aloneness. Ozora says the first adult he learned to trust was his high school teacher, Takashi Fujii. Without him, I wouldn't even be around today. It was a miracle I came across him, said Ozora. Fujii remembers. He said he noticed in school that Ozora never laughed. The teacher said he tried to show care for his student and get him excited about life. Ozora has begun collecting information from Anata no Ebasho for a research project. He hopes to continue his university studies in Great Britain. Britain has become a world leader in dealing with public health issues, with a minister for loneliness named in 2018. But Ozora says his biggest dream is to have a happy family. He said, I never had that. There is a father and there is a mother. The children are happy and can do whatever they want. It's an everyday family. But if anything, that is what I want the most. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we take an English word or expression and explore it a little deeper. Today, we are talking about a lunar phenomenon, a moon event. It's called a blue moon.
Blue moon, you saw me standing alone, without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own.
Experts at the U.S. National Aeronautics and Space Administration explain this lunar event. They say a blue moon is the extra moon in a season with four full moons. The NASA website says that since the 1940s, the term blue moon has also been used for the second full moon in a calendar month. This usually happens only every 2.5 years. The NASA experts explain that a blue moon is not actually blue in color. In fact, it looks the same as a regular monthly full moon. What makes a blue moon different is that it does not appear in the sky that often. And this is how we use it as an English expression. A blue moon is a long or seemingly long period of time. If I say something happens once in a blue moon, it is uncommon, infrequent, rare. It happens very seldom. These words all describe something that happens once in a blue moon. For example, I usually keep busy. So when I'm not working, I like to sing songs, write stories, or read books. But sometimes I just like to do nothing. So once in a blue moon, you'll find me on the couch watching movies and eating popcorn. Here's another example. Let's say you have a friend who you do not see very much anymore. You can say you see him once in a blue moon. It feels like an eternity since you have talked. It's like he has dropped off the face of the earth. You can also say it has been forever since you have seen him. Forever is a long time. So forever and a day is even longer. And it has been forever and a day since you have seen your friend. You miss him. You should call. And finally, here is our last example. If you have been busy, you may not have had time to practice your English. But just remember, if you only practice once in a blue moon, your English may not improve very quickly. So join us again next week for another Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
Blue moon of Kentucky, keep on shining. Shine on the one that's gone and left me blue. Blue moon of Kentucky, keep on shining.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. South Carolina withdrew from the United States on December 20th, 1860. The state seceded because a Republican, Abraham Lincoln, had been elected president. The Republicans were a new party, and Lincoln was the first to be elected president. They wanted to stop slavery from spreading into the Western territories. Southern states believed they had a constitutional right to take property, including slaves, anywhere. They also feared that any interference with slavery would end their way of life. Frank Oliver and Larry West tell what happened after South Carolina left the Union.
South Carolina faced several problems after it seceded. The most serious problem was what to do with property owned by the federal government. There were several United States forts in and around the port of Charleston. Fort Moultrie had fewer than 70 soldiers. Castle Pinckney had only one. And Fort Sumter, which was still being built, had none. The commander of the forts asked for more men. Without them, he said, he could not defend the forts. The army refused. It told the commander to defend the forts as best he could. He was told to do nothing that might cause South Carolina to attack. If South Carolina attacked or planned to attack, then he could move his men into the fort that would be easiest to defend. That would probably be the new one, Fort Sumter.
The governor of South Carolina planned to stop any movement of federal troops. He ordered state soldiers to stop every boat in Charleston Harbor. They were to permit no United States troops to reach Fort Sumter. If any boat carrying troops refused to stop, the state soldiers were to sink it and seize the fort. 6 days after South Carolina seceded from the Union, the commander of Charleston's forts decided to move his men to Fort Sumter. They would move as soon as it was dark. The federal troops crossed the port in small boats. The state soldiers did not see them. The governor was furious when he learned what had happened. He demanded that the federal troops leave Fort Sumter. The commander said they would stay. The governor then ordered state soldiers to seize the other two forts in Charleston Harbor. And he ordered the state flag raised over all other federal property in the city.
President James Buchanan, who would leave office in just a few months, was forced to deal with the situation. His cabinet was deeply divided on the issue. The Southerners wanted him to recognize South Carolina and order all federal troops out of Charleston Harbor. The Northerners said he must not give up any federal property or rights. The president agreed to meet with three representatives from South Carolina. They had come to Washington to negotiate the future of federal property in their state. The attorney general said the meeting was a mistake. These gentlemen, he said, claimed to be ambassadors of South Carolina. This is foolish. They cannot be ambassadors. They are lawbreakers, traitors, and should be arrested. You cannot negotiate with them.
The Attorney General and the Secretary of State threatened to resign if President Buchanan gave in to South Carolina's demands. The president finally agreed not to give in. He said he would keep federal troops in Charleston Harbor. And he said Fort Sumter would be defended against all hostile action. On the last day of 1860, he ordered 200 troops and extra supplies sent to Fort Sumter. The War Department wanted to keep the operation secret. So the troops and supplies were put on a fast civilian ship instead of a slower warship. It was thought that a civilian ship could get into Charleston Harbor before state forces could act. But a Southern senator learned of the operation. He warned the governor of South Carolina. When the ship arrived in Charleston Harbor, South Carolina soldiers were waiting.
The soldiers lit a cannon and fired a warning shot. The ship refused to stop. Other cannons then opened fire. The commander of federal troops at Fort Sumter had a difficult decision to make. He had received permission to defend the fort if attacked, but his orders said nothing about defending ships. He knew that if he opened fire, the United States and South Carolina would be at war. The decision was made for him. South Carolina's cannons finally hit the ship. The ship slowed, then turned back to sea. It returned north with all the troops and supplies.
The commander of Fort Sumter sent a message to the governor of South Carolina. Your forces, he wrote, fired this morning on a civilian ship flying the flag of my government. Since I have not been informed that South Carolina declared war on the United States, I can only believe that this hostile act was done without your knowledge or permission. For this reason, and only this, I did not fire on your guns. If, the commander said, the governor had approved the shelling, it would be an act of war, and he would be forced to close the port of Charleston. No ship would be permitted to enter or leave. The governor's answer came back within hours. He said South Carolina was now independent. He said the attempt by the United States to strengthen its force at Fort Sumter was clearly an act of aggression, and he demanded that the commander surrender.
During the crisis over Fort Sumter, Congress tried to find a compromise that might prevent war. Lawmakers proposed a new line across the country. South of the line, slavery would be permitted. North of the line, slavery would be illegal. Many Republicans supported the proposal, even though the Republican Party opposed the spread of slavery into the Western territories. One Republican, however, rejected the idea completely. He was Abraham Lincoln, who would take office as president in March. Lincoln said there could be no compromise on extending slavery. "If there is," he said, "then all our hard work is lost. If trouble comes, it is better to let it come now than at some later time."
The trouble would come soon. One by one, the states of the South seceded. By February 1st, 1861, six states had followed South Carolina out of the Union. A few days later, representatives from the states met in Montgomery, Alabama. Their job was to create a new nation. It would be an independent republic called the Confederate States of America. The convention approved a constitution for the new nation. The document was like the Constitution of the United States, but with major changes. The Southern Constitution gave greater importance to the rights of states, and it said there could be no laws against slavery. The convention named former United States Senator Jefferson Davis to be president of the Confederate States of America. Davis did not want civil war, but he was not afraid of it. He said, "Our separation from the old Union is complete. The time for compromise has passed. Should others try to change our decision with force, they will smell Southern gunpowder and feel the steel of Southern swords."
Jefferson Davis left his farm in Mississippi to become president of the Confederate States of America on February 11th. On that same day, Abraham Lincoln left his home in Illinois to become president of the United States. As Lincoln got on the train that would take him to Washington, he said, "I now leave, not knowing when or whether ever I may return. The task before me is greater than that which rested upon our first president. Without the help of God, I cannot succeed. With that assistance, I cannot fail. Let us hope that all yet will be well."
And that is our program for today. Thank you for listening. Join us again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Anna Mateo.